This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I want to welcome you to Season 2 of Intelligence Unclassified. This season, we are refocusing our episodes to better reflect our office's three core mission areas: counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. We'll be pulling both local and national experts in these three fields, all in an effort to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on the current trends and issues facing the Garden State. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov.
Hi, this is Dean Barada from the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. And this morning I'm joined by one of our analysts, Angie, who's going to talk about some recent propaganda by the terrorist group ISIS. Good morning, Angie.
Hi, good morning.
Could you tell us a little bit about ISIS just released one of their new magazines? Could you tell us what that is and why we would care?
So ISIS releases a monthly magazine. It is called Rumeya, which is the Arabic word for Rome. This is their English language magazine. They've been releasing this since the establishment of the group's caliphate back in 2014. It initially started off in its earlier iteration as Debik or Debik. That version of the magazine was discontinued in August of 2016. And then they recently, in September 2016, renamed it and unveiled the first issue of Rumeya in September.
So what sort, this is an online magazine, right? So there's not a print copy available at newsstands or anything like that. What sorts of things are in the magazine that they put out?
So typically what they'll put out, they will highlight or praise recent attacks that they've conducted or followers or sympathizers have conducted on the group's behalf. So they'll put in a little quote in there saying, for instance, we praised the attack conducted by an Islamic State soldier that was carried out in France or England, for instance. They will provide tactical guidance to their followers. So something that we've seen with the Rumeya magazines, they provide readers with a Just Terror Tactics article in several of the issues, providing detailed tactical instructions on how to conduct specific attacks using certain weapons and providing the readers with ideal targets. They will provide readers with regular Muslim conduct, so how to prepare themselves for the month of Ramadan, how to be a good Muslim wife, for instance, articles such as that. They provide inspiration for fighters, so they will highlight things such as, while we are losing, for instance, territory in Iraq and Syria, don't forget that we're still conducting attacks in the West. We just took over a city in the Philippines. They will try to counter their losses with other successes. So what they've been doing is they've been also providing a lot of graphics on operations and successes that they have had in the battlefield in Iraq and Syria, something that we previously didn't see with the earlier version of the magazine Debik.
So who is who's the primary audience for these magazines? Is it only for people who are sort of already in the organization, or are they trying to appeal to outsiders?
Good question. So the primary audience, so this magazine is released in between 10 to 12 languages. The audience typically tends to be their supporters overseas. However, what we've been seeing with Rumeya is a lot of the content in there is recycled. And it's recycled from a newsletter that the group releases every week. It's called El Naba. And that is primarily targeted for their Arabic-speaking audience and mostly for people within the group, and it's regionally focused. So what ISIS has been doing is recycling and retranslating a lot of the content from El Naba and putting it into Rumeya. So you see kind of a mix of a global focus and also a local focus, which is a lot different than what we saw with Debik.
Now, do we have any evidence that anyone conducting the terrorist attacks we've been hearing about recently have been reading these magazines or taking any guidance from them?
So nothing conclusive, nothing definitive that we can kind of point at and say, yes, we found that this attacker read the magazine prior to the attack. However, when you kind of look at the style of the attacks, a lot of the tactics that are highlighted in the magazines are being utilized by some of the attackers. So what ISIS typically does is it sees specific attacks conducted by its supporters. It has put the successes from those attacks in their articles, the Just Terror Tactics articles. And then after that, subsequent attacks we've seen have been using similar tactics as the knife attacks, the vehicle attacks. Whether it is because they read the articles or whether they are copycat attacks from previous operations conducted, It's hard to say, but there is a level of influence that these articles have on supporters.
Now, you've read, I think, all 10 of these Ramayya magazines and most, if not all, of the Dabiq, the predecessor magazines. Can you talk a little bit about how they changed over time?
So with Dabiq, we saw a level of professionalism. I don't think I've seen any grammatical or spelling errors in Dabiq. Dabiq was a lot longer as well, more globally focused. With Ramayya, a couple issues I found, some grammatical spelling errors, which is not common for ISIS. They're pretty good with that stuff. Another change that we've been seeing as well, and I mentioned this before, is with Dabiq, the overwhelming majority of the content in Dabiq was original content. With Ramayya, we've been seeing, and we can kind of rough estimate here, between 50 to 60% of the content in Ramayya is recycled. So that kind of just is insightful. It's telling. It shows that the group doesn't have the same propagandists around to kind of dedicate as much time as it did with Dabiq. Another thing that we saw in terms of a change is, while before Dabiq would provide some general vague guidance in terms of target Westerners or kill infidels in the West, etc., very general vague instructions, with Ramayya, the change that we saw is that for the first time, ISIS began providing very detailed, lengthy instructions on not just where to attack, but how to acquire the weapons, how to hold a knife when you're conducting an attack, etc. So they went into a lot more detail than we've seen them do before.
So in this most recent issue that came out, they did mention the attacks in Manchester, or the attack in Manchester, the bombing attack at the concert. But that was a pretty small part of the magazine, right? I mean, most of it was on the activities in the Philippines, which probably hasn't gotten as much media attention here in the United States. And do you have any thoughts on that as to perhaps why, what's going on there?
What they do is they basically say, you know, in Ramayya 10, is while we are losing some territory in Iraq and Syria, hey, don't forget, we just conducted the Manchester attack. They feature something at the end, towards the end, talking about the London attacks as well. But the name of Ramayya 10 focuses on jihad in East Asia. And the reason for that is they're really trying to capitalize a lot on East Asia, because the success there is a lot greater than what they've been seeing in Iraq and Syria, and obviously greater than the attacks in England. So they're able to seize a city in the Philippines. There's ongoing attacks every day there, killing soldiers in the Philippines, et cetera. So that is something they're trying to increase momentum around. They're trying to focus on and bring attention to their supporters that, hey, we're still gaining ground and territory in another country in Asia.
So last question, kind of not related to the propaganda. We're recording this on the morning of June 12th, and we saw some unconfirmed, very important to emphasize this, unconfirmed reports over the weekend that ISIS's leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, may have been killed. So just any first thoughts on those reports?
So we've seen these typically come out a lot, reports of him being injured or killed. Nothing, like Dean said, is confirmed. But I'm actually currently working on a product right now that looks into what would happen if Baghdadi were to die. And the group has already survived four peaceful leadership transitions since 2006. The group has put measures in place to safeguard against leadership losses. The measures they have in place are meant to make sure that they're not 100% reliant on one specific leader. So they have something called a Shura Council, which is a consultative council. And that council is in charge of selecting a new leader in the event that Baghdadi were to die or is killed. There were reports back in April that the Shura Council did select someone as a likely replacement. However, typically when they do replace a leader, they tend to be, for the most part, very clandestine figures that most of us have never heard of before. So they do have a pretty deep leadership bench in terms of replacing Baghdadi if he were to die.
And when you say that there were four peaceful transitions of power, really not peaceful for the people who died, but what you're talking about is peaceful within the organization. They kind of all agreed who the next successor would be, right?
Correct. They seem to be smooth transitions in terms of just replacing the leader. With Baghdadi, when and if he is replaced, I anticipate that the specific kind of challenges he may have to face is gaining a legitimacy among the group's various affiliates worldwide, and kind of getting them to renew their pledge of allegiance for the group and to him as the leader.
Angie, thank you very much. And thank you, everyone who's listening in.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.